You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
Morning, everybody. It is the Mike Salk Show on 710 ESPN Seattle. We're on 710sports.com. We're on the 710 Sports app. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. I was obsessively checking the rating yesterday once again. We don't seem to be moving up or down much.
I was going to ask you if there's going to be an update on that, or if I should, wait for you to bring it up just in case it does go poorly. I don't want to keep reopening of wounds.
Yeah, no, it's sticking the same. We're at 4.6. I'd really like to get back to 4.7. I felt great when we were at 4.7. That felt, we were into the high fours at that point, but this still feels mid fours.
Do you know your Uber rating?
No, I haven't taken an Uber in so long. I guess
true,
I
it has.
But,
it's been a while.
Frequently. Yeah.
I check that once in a while.
Just to make sure everything's okay.
Yeah, who didn't give me a 5? Like, why do I have a 4.7?
I generally don't want to say anything when I'm in the Uber. Like, just, how could my rating go down? What did I possibly do?
The only thing I can think of is that I've gotten Ubers for friends that probably shouldn't have taken.
And then you're doing the right thing, too.
But it's bad for my score. Behaving here.
Right, I totally get that. I was thinking about, Pete Carroll says he wants to compete every day, right? If you're Pete, that's your phrase, right? Compete every day. Everything should come back down to that one core belief. And when you think about the fact that Pete wants to compete every day, should you really be surprised at all that he reached out to Cam Newton, which he told me yesterday?
Well, just so that you know, we've already talked to him. We're talking to everybody that could help us,
So it shouldn't be a surprise that Pete's already talked to Cam, right? He's out there. He's won an MVP award. You might not like him. I saw a text yesterday that said, I will never root for the Seahawks again if they sign Cam Newton, which I can't fathom that level of bitterness, but okay. And especially once Cam said on his video that he had been vaxxed, he's in play, right? So Pete went on to clarify some of that yesterday afternoon.
Well, we're doing everything we can with everybody that's available always. And so I talked to him a couple times, and just trying to see what was going on in his world and all that, and we're wide open and continuing to compete with that, and there was nothing to be done then, and we're really counting on Gino to do the job, and that's how the conversation went with him too. We were counting on Gino to do the job and all that, so we'll see what happens. I don't know what's going to happen next.
All right, so this is a story about the Seahawks and Cam Newton, but it's also a story about Geno Smith, right? It's a story about the relationship, the trust in Geno Smith, and also in how interested they might be in someone like Cam Newton. So let me address Cam first, and we'll talk about Geno.
Can I ask a question before you do this?
Yes.
What is Cam is going to be Geno's backup, right? This isn't to replace Geno.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know what's going to happen. I don't think Pete knows. In fact, he ends that cut by saying, I don't know, we'll see what happens.
I thought, okay. I just want to make sure that
I think
was
that
what
those
we were
two
going
things
with.
Are connected, quite frankly. So when have you seen anything from Geno Smith that tells you he's like a premier starter in the NFL? I haven't. I saw a couple of good drives. I also saw two games end in turnovers. So I'm not, I saw a team that was inept in the first half trying to throw the ball and then eventually had to resort to running the ball on 3rd and 7, 1st and 20, et cetera, in order to try to continue to move forward. So no, I don't think that any conversation is like Geno's the starter set in stone for the next couple of games. Let me ask this question first. What do you think it means that he said he talked to Cam a couple of times? What do you learn from him saying, yeah, it's not just that they've talked a couple of times. What does that mean to you?
That was the first text that went out once we found out that Russ broke his hand?
That's kind of what it means to me. That like of all the potential folks out there, they had enough interest in Cam that they didn't just have one conversation, they had two. Now, Cam is saying that other teams have reached out and I haven't found the right fit. Okay, fine. I don't know if it means they called Cam, he said, no, not right now. They called Cam again, and he said, still not right now. I mean, that's a possibility. Maybe they called him once just to find out about his vax status, and then they called him again, like, hey, would you be interested? I don't know, but I do think that it is telling that they talked not just once, but twice to Cam Newton, as they should, compete every day. if you're competing every day, isn't like the only MVP quarterback that's just out there and available? I guess maybe you want to consider Drew Brees. He seems to have a gig right now. I don't think Drew's coming back out of retirement. I think that that ship has sailed. So he's the only MVP out there who's available. How could you possibly not call him if your motto is to compete every day?
I think I'm more surprised that they brought Blake Bortles in for a workout than the fact that they've reached out to Cam.
Well,
twice.
And those may have two separate meanings, right? Reaching out to Cam may be, hey, this is an opportunity for a starter. Reaching out to Blake Bortles may be a Jake Luton situation of like,
sure, yeah.
they may be looking at them for two different roles. Plus, you know, Geno Smith's a play away from being injured himself. It's not like his track record in the NFL is of playing for 10 straight years. So I think that is absolutely what the motto compete every day means. Second part of it, when you hear Pete say, yeah, we're talking to everybody and yeah, we're going to put our support behind Geno. And also, I don't know what's going to happen next. What does it tell you about the faith and support for Geno Smith? Is it high?
It sounded like it was wavering a little bit to me.
Was it tepid?
That's
Can we call it tepid? I think I would call it tepid. It was there. He certainly said it. If you're reading the quotes, he definitely says, yeah, you know, we're going to do everything we can to help out Geno. And by the way, he does more than that. He went on to talk more about the whole run game thing. And again, a lot of it seems to be about making the world a little bit easier for Geno Smith.
It was just a commitment we made at halftime that this was how we were going to change the game. And that was to rely on the guys up front and pound away at it and see if we couldn't turn it. And, it, you know, the guys did a fantastic job, and I think you saw, we've liked these guys all along, but we have not in any of these games called on them like we did last night. And so it's a significant step for us, I think. In particularly as Geno is getting his feet on the ground, it's really important that we do a really nice job here, and so we're going to continue to stay with it.
I guess what I take a few things out of that cut, but most importantly on the Geno topic, nothing has been earned yet.
Like, so he was getting his feet on the ground. Didn't say he had his feet on the ground.
I mean, he's been here for 3 years. Like, get the feet on the ground.
Feet should be
man.
On the ground.
They don't have the time for that. That's supposed to be the whole idea of having a veteran backup, right? If you've got a young backup and you're saying, hey, you know, it's going to take him some time. He's never really played in the NFL. Like, I think we all kind of understand that. The whole idea of Geno Smith as a veteran backup who's been here for a few seasons now is the feeder on the ground. He is what he is. You think Geno's going to get better? I guess I don't have any faith in that. He's been who he is in the NFL for like 6 years now, 7 years, whatever it is. I don't have some faith that there's like a corner for him to turn. There's no mystery that we're waiting to unravel with Geno Smith. So I would call that support tepid. And so put all those things together and knowing that this weekend, or rather this Monday night against the Saints, that's a must-win game for this season. Must-win game for this season. It's going to have to be Geno Smith. You don't have time to get anybody in now and all of that. So I wonder where Pete's head is at when it comes to the most important position on the field. And it should be a reminder, Chris Collinsworth may not have realized how important Russell Wilson was to the Seahawks. Have you heard that sound, by the way? That's nuts. Did he really say that? Let me play this for you. So it was really quick, but what?
To get going.
Well, my first thought is how much do they miss Russell Wilson? I mean, I didn't know he was quite as significant to this team as what he actually is proving to be so far for a half of football.
Well, really?
Well, to be fair, I saw a really good tweet. It's like his last name isn't Mahomes or Brady, so he hasn't been watching very closely.
Right, and he's not an NFC East team, so yeah. I guess that makes things challenging. I think what he was trying to say was just how bad they looked in the first half. At least I hope so, because Collinsworth's not a stupid guy, I think. But if you're Pete Carroll, like you're so beholden to what happens with your quarterback. And every move that you make right now, whether it's Geno Smith or thinking about Cam Newton, everything has to be with an eye towards what happens when Russell returns. But at the same time, if you want to try to give this thing a go, if you want to try to make the playoffs this year, you got to win Monday night. You got to be 100% ready. And I don't know that I get the sense he's 100% behind and in support of Geno Smith. So that is a little bit concerning to me, I will say, as you get ready for this one. Because what is Pete going to want to try to do this? Just run the ball. If you don't have faith in your quarterback and your stated philosophy and what you truly believe in is to run the ball anyway, I think you're going to see a whole heavy dose of it. Now, we'll see whether or not it actually works, because eventually the Saints are going to stuff the box. Then what do? You're going to have to put some faith in Geno Smith. He's going to have to do something. All right, coming up, we'll be talking about this throughout the day, but when a 6-1 loss isn't the most embarrassing part of your game, you got a problem. We'll talk about that and give you everything you need to know next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Salk, Cam's trash and not a leader. You know your obsession with Cam is because he won an MVP like a decade ago. And a lot of texts that come in. I tell you what, man. Say this about Cam. That guy inspires a reaction. Somebody else asked if I was tap dancing into the studio this morning. Do you think because of Cam? I don't have a lot of reason to tap dance, but I think I'd look good doing it. If I'd look good doing anything, it's tap dancing. With that whole thing where you have to clap your hands and make those weird circles with your arms, like a circus seal or something.
I think that's harder than it looks.
I'm sure it is. I think I'd be terrible at it.
I thought you just said you'd be good at it.
Well, yeah. I was joking. Well, I wasn't being serious, and hopefully people understood that. Time for Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Why do you have to do that thing with the clapping? I don't really understand that.
I don't even actually
think rules of tap dancing.
Yeah, I think it's in the rules. I think it's part of the requirements for tap dancing. Pete Carroll says he was, quote, freaking pissed after the first half on Sunday night. Hard to blame him. His team hadn't done much of anything offensively, and worse, he didn't recognize the style of game they were playing. Something happened, though, in that locker room to change things in the second half. Pete wouldn't give us all the details, but when they returned, they played a style that he certainly endorsed. The way I see it is like this. Pete tried to be okay with the shift towards passing in the last year or so. He hired a young Turk out of the Rams system. He said in training camp that his system could handle more passing. He talked after week one about being able to adapt. But when his team lost a game, his quarterback, and he was down early, he just wasn't able to keep up the charade any longer. That's how I see it. Pete believes you need to run to win. And he told me yesterday there's a lot of people who want to gripe and complain about running the football, but you saw we scored 20 points in the second half and did it by controlling the football game. That's what Pete Carroll believes. Now, here is where it gets interesting is when Russell Wilson returns. Pete also said that's how we need to play for the next few weeks and on into the season. So, will Russ be okay with that? Will this accelerate whatever issues caused him to mention the four teams he would consider in a trade last offseason? Or can they win enough games to mollify him? The intrigue continues into this season with enormous potential for change hanging in the balance. Meanwhile, fantastic Monday night game in Tennessee, coming from behind late to beat Buffalo. Their defense stopped Josh Allen on a fourth down quarterback sneak inside the 3-yard line to secure the win. It was a great game. Bills could have kicked, but instead opted to go for it rather than try to play for OT. Jeffrey Simmons made the play to win. By the way, 3 touchdowns to go with 143 yards for Derrick Henry. So two thoughts on that game. One, who in the Seahawks defense would take over like that in a huge spot and make that play to stop the quarterback sneak? Second, running the ball with Derrick Henry sure seems to make that team function well. 143 yards. Yeah, that'll make life a lot easier on your quarterback. Take note.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, it's the ugliest game we've seen so far from the Kraken. They were blown off the ice in Philly, lose 6-1. First time they've actually looked overmatched, like an old school expansion team, really. Anyway, Philip Grubauer made his 4th straight start in net. That surprised me as well. My understanding was that this was supposed to be a little bit more of a timeshare with Chris Drieger, and that has not been the case so far. Regardless, Grubauer didn't even make it through the 2nd period before he was pulled after the 5th goal. Usually when that happens, it's not the goalie's fault. Suspect defense certainly appeared to be the issue, although I don't think Grubauer helped particularly. Anyway, chalk it up to an off night for a team that maybe is tired from a long road trip to start off an emotional season. It was also the chippiest game we've seen yet. A whole bunch of legitimate fights stemming from players taking exception to liberties being taken. Jamie Oleksiak looked like a clear winner in his fight. Nathan Bastian, on the other hand, dude, there's losing a fight and then there's losing a fight.
Should
and
we send a card?
We should send something. Maybe offer to pay a hospital bill or something. He got it trounced. Carson Soucy had the lone goal. They're right back at it tonight in New Jersey. I'd expect Drieger to get the start in net. Elsewhere, Red Sox hit their 3rd Grand Slam in 2 games. This time it was Kyle Schwarber doing the honors as Boston cruises to a 12-3 win in Game 3. They lead the series 2-1. Game 4 tonight, 5 o'clock, Zach Greinke against Nick Pivetta. Game 3 of the NLCS will be earlier, 2 p.m., Walker Buehler and Charlie Morton in that one.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, it happened. Nick Rolovich has been terminated for cause by Washington State University after the deadline for state employees to be vaccinated passed yesterday. He did not get vaccinated and thus was one of five coaches among many state employees to be let go. Defensive coordinator Jake Dickert will take over as the head coach for now. Athletic director Pat Chun called it disheartening, but said their priority would be the health and well-being of the student athletes. As for a long-term replacement, Bruce Feldman had some names, including Jay Norvell, Brent Brennan, Kalen DeBoer, and Troy Calhoun. I have never heard of any of those four people, but they are apparently in the running for the next head coaching job at Washington State. Those are three things you need to know. We do that every hour at quarter past the hour.
So I was watching that horrible fight last night. Bastion, who was it that just beat the life out of him?
Thompson? I forget the guy's name.
Okay.
But it was... Ugh.
So 11 minutes left in the third period when that happened. And Thompson just skates off the ice after. He's done. Just going to the locker.
First he went to the penalty box, and then he found out that they had a misconduct. So I think that was it for him, and he took off.
So misconduct means a longer penalty?
Well, misconduct can be a 10-minute misconduct or a game misconduct. I'm not sure, honestly, why it was given last night. I was sort of watching and also cooking dinner at the same time at that point. The game was a little out of reach, so I was not, like, paying rapt attention.
Yeah.
I don't know what they gave them the misconducts for, but...
Because they both got the 10-minute.
Yeah, and it might have been game misconducts. I'm not sure what happened.
Okay.
But that does happen sometimes where you'll get a 10-minute misconduct means you can't play for 10 minutes, but you don't have to sit in the penalty box for that time.
So it's not a 10-minute power play.
That's right. It's just you're just not allowed to play during that time.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I just want to know what
led to
this.
That's the best I can
give. There was an explanation for it, because I was like, I thought all fights were the same.
Yeah, no, they're a little different. Good text from the 509, I'll agree. Kraken looked slow, sloppy, and uninterested last night. Probably an off night and probably a little tired already. I would agree. The only thing I would say is I don't know if they looked uninterested. The one thing I'll give them credit for is they stood up for themselves. They had an off night. Their defense just wasn't there. And that, by the way, is the biggest concern about this team through four games. This is supposed to be a defensive team. Where's the defense? Seriously. This is supposed to be a defensive team.
That was the expectation based on the roster they built? Is that what you're telling
They've me? Had one game where they've given up fewer than three goals, right?
Yeah,
they gave up three,
everyone thought
four,
the defense would be the strength, and they would lack in goal scoring.
Yeah, right. I will admit to some concern over what they're doing on the defensive end. Adam Larson's a guy they gave a lot of money to and a long-term deal to through four games. Now, an admittedly incredibly small sample size, he has not looked like the kind of shutdown defender that you would give that kind of cash to and that kind of long-term.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, I don't know. So that there are some little concerns that have popped up here over the course of the first week. It's not perfect. Doesn't mean that you can't get over those things. And there have been some really good signs as well. But yeah, if there's one thing that kind of has my radar up, it's, hey, what's going on with the defense here? Why doesn't it look like it's supposed to? The goaltending has been okay. Grubauer has not looked like a, you know, stand on his head kind of goalie. I can't come up with two or three saves he's made where, like, whoa, no one else makes that save in that moment.
I mean, on Saturday, I felt like he had a couple of flurries where he had to come right back for the rebound that were pretty impressive.
He's been good.
But yeah, nothing with like some crazy glove save that you just can't believe.
He's been good. But again, like, you're kind of looking for great given how much you've banked on him, how much money you gave him, and the fact that you gave him the first four starts of the year when by all accounts this was supposed to be more of a job share with Chris Drieger. So I'll be watching. That's for sure.
Imagine giving a bunch of money to a defensive player and it just didn't really start showing.
I don't know
whether
Seahawks fans would have any idea what you're talking about.
We're definitely not on that level yet.
All right, coming up, from calling Cam to running the ball, and yes, some thoughts on Jamal Adams. Pete Carroll had a lot to say after the loss to Pittsburgh. You're going to want to hear it. Next, Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle. Well, good morning, Coach. We appreciate you being with us this morning. I know we'll talk about the game, obviously, and I want to jump right into it. Before we do, I wanted to start with Daryl Taylor just because it was such a scary scene last night. It sounded like there was some decent news last night. How is he doing this morning?
Yeah, he really did get a great report on his CAT scans that he was clear and all that. He's got more tests to do just to double check and triple check and make sure he's okay, MRIs and stuff today. But the initial return is that, you know, he didn't have any major damage at all, and he feels good. I talked to him just a few minutes ago, and he's got a sore neck right now, you know, stiff neck a little bit. But he really feels, you know, relative to what it looked like and what we were, you know, having to deal with, he really got a great turnaround, great news.
What caused them to go into the protocol? What is it that leads to that?
He immediately, you know, was talking about his neck. You know, he talked about, you know, he got his neck hyperextended or got jammed, and he, you know, and so they immediately go into, you know, isolating the movement. And that just leads them down a path where they've got to, you know, you got to go for it. And he was so adamant about getting up and wanting to get off the ground and did not want to get carted off and the whole thing. He was just battling, and we were all just loving him up and just trying to calm him down so that, you know, that wasn't the time to compete in that manner, you know. But that's what his nature told him to do, and you got to admire the heck out of him. He was tough as nails.
I mean, does that make it realistic he could return even as soon as this week? Is that a possibility?
I don't know what to say about that. Give us another couple of days here of tests and stuff, and we'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Good. Well, good news.
Really good news. Yeah, really good news.
What did you take from the game?
Well, what a game, man. What our guys were amazing. Let me answer a bigger question that you haven't asked yet, that, you know, where are we and what are we feeling like and all that. This start is painful. It's painful. We've not been here, you know, and maybe there was a time, I don't know, 10 years ago or something like that, but it's a painful start, but so that our people that, you know, that love us and follow us and all, our guys are not beaten. They're not hapless about what's going on. They just showed you who they are and what they're all about. This season is going to take a lot longer than we would like to figure out what it's all about. And the start has just put us behind the eight ball a little bit. It just means it's just going to take a long time. And so our guys are going to approach it with the right mentality to keep battling and make the opportunity come available to us by the way we fight our way through it. And just like we fought our way through that game, it's not any different. And that's the nature of our club and our organization, and we're not going to be anything different than that. But, it's just going to take us 2 months. We're not going to know anything for eight, ten weeks before really what the season's all about. And that means that if we can project and withhold judgment and just keep battling, a lot of stuff is going to happen and scenarios will take shape, and then we'll see what, you know, how good can the Cardinals be? You know, can they really do it or not? You know, if they can put together a great season, or are they going to run into their issues too? Issues are just around the corner. I mean, they're just a flash away. You know, they're one throw away. They're, you know, from what's going on. And so meanwhile, we just have to keep digging in, and that's what we're going to do. And I look forward to that challenge and fighting our way through it. I was so proud of the way the guys responded. It was a beautiful comeback.
What happened at halftime? Because you came out certainly like a different team offensively.
It was a significantly marked halftime. You know, I was so freaking pissed that we had started that game like that, knowing that we needed to take care of our new quarterback, and we needed to run the football, and we didn't get that accomplished, you know, and so we just declared we're turning it, and you saw exactly what happened, and our guys up front took the game over, and both sides of the ball played great football to give us a chance to win the game, and legitimately the chance to have the game won, and we would have made a heroic comeback, but it was significant at halftime,
You say pissed, I mean that's not a word I generally associate with you. I mean you're a fairly optimistic guy. Does that mean you were angry with them? You showed it. You flipped a Gatorade table. I mean, what does that mean?
Well, I'm not telling you everything that happened. But I was mad that I wasn't able. I didn't get it done. I knew what we needed to do in this game, and we needed to be really balanced and run the football and take the pressure off of Geno having to stand back there and drop back and throw the ball against a wicked pass rush, you know, and that was, it didn't show up and we didn't get it done, and situations call for, you know, the try to battle for the next first down and all of that, and we just didn't get it accomplished, and then we did. You know, you saw us. That's how we needed to play. That's how we need to play for the next couple of weeks and on into the season. And really, Mike, that's how we've played when we're at our best for years. And there's a lot of people that want to, you know, gripe and complain about, you know, running the football and all that. But you saw, we scored 20 points in the second half. How many points do you need to score? I mean, 40 points in a game, that's pretty good, you know. We did it by controlling the football game with the strength of our team. I thought let me start first with the offensive line. They were phenomenal. They controlled the game, and they've been waiting. And Alex was phenomenal in his effort. He made so many 4- and 5- and 6-yard runs, just by his cuts and his instincts and all of that. And then you could see that DJ ran with behind that line too, and so did Homer. You know, everybody could run behind because those guys did such a fantastic job, and they're there, they're ready for us, and so we need to let them really kind of seize this opportunity to get our season on track and balance this out.
What'd you learn about Geno last night?
He was competing his tail off. He was calm. He was poised. He was in control. He handled everything really well and throughout the whole thing. And he was so upset that he it comes down and he loses the football right at the end there, and really, when you look right at it, Geno had terrible ball security as he ducked up in there. I mean, we don't let anybody run with the football like that, and he'll see it. You know, he had the ball like he's carrying, a loaf of bread, like they say, and he got knocked out. They can knock it out anyway, but we don't ever, don't ever want to look like that. And so unfortunately, that got us, but, he gave us a chance, he took us right down there when we had to in a minute 30 and gave us a chance to put the game into OT and the whole thing.
What'd you make of Russ yesterday? He was out there. He did his full routine. We got to see the in the huddle 2-minute drill and everything he did pregame, and then somehow managed. How did he manage to find himself on the field for the coin toss?
Yeah, that's just, he could, so we did it, and he makes all those choices for us, and why would we not use the strength of his, his experience there? So that was it. But what he got done, you never seen anybody do what he did. I mean, he went through probably 200 plays, before the game, and he actually did them. I mean, he went right through the whole process of it, calling it in the huddle, making the adjustments. Just like he was talking, talking to the players that he would normally talk to and making the adjustments and the changes and the things like that. And that his focus throughout that time is what he's done in practice, around the practice field as well. And he will not lose a step in preparation for the time when he comes back.
We talked a little bit last week here about some other, you brought in Blake Bortles for an interview or for a look last week. Are there others scheduled? Cam Newton said he was vaxxed as of yesterday. Is Cam somebody you would talk to?
Well, just so that we've already talked to him. We're talking to everybody that could help us, to go right back to the base philosophy that we always, we uphold here is that, we're going to be competing in every turn with whoever would be available. And we're on it.
How'd those conversations go?
They're all right.
Okay. Good. All right, let's go to the other side of the ball a little bit, talk through this defense. What did you see? Because, we spent a lot of time the last few weeks talking about this one concept and issues in the passing game with
put it to rest.
Yeah,
totally.
I mean, was it gone?
Yeah, we totally
did. They run those same concepts and you defended them well, or did they not run them as much?
They had it. They did show it, yeah, but we defended stuff really well. And the adjustments that Kenny and the staff had to make, they got it done with the players. The players did a really good job of it. And we put these guys under control, I thought, throughout the night. We had, they had a touchdown series, and then they had one. We messed up with a couple. There's a couple things that happened that got them their two scores, and other than that, I thought the guys played really well. That's a pretty well-oiled offense, with Ben and how he does it in the running game and how he plays his style. And I thought our guys really adapted really well to it.
It's Trey Brown.
I thought the corners played really good too. I was really pleased with their play, and particularly DJ had a terrific game. But Trey Brown, you're just going to bring him up.
Yeah,
he was good.
He's
He was really. He's been on it. I mean, I've said this a number of times to everybody that there's no plays in his background with us in practice and the scrimmages and in preseason, the few plays that he had in the games that weren't really consistently tuned up. And he went out and did exactly that. That's exactly the way he's been looking in practice. So that's a big statement for us. And it comes at a good time. We need him to be competitive and be out there. So he'll have a chance to play a lot moving forward.
I heard you say after the game that some of the issues with the pass rush were maybe with the way you were forced to defend their running game and some of the things they like to do in the RPO. But What can you do to generate more pressure on quarterbacks?
Well, this is Ben doesn't let you do it. He doesn't let you rush him. The ball's out too fast, and you can't get there. He knows. I mean, he's 39 years old. He's been playing this game for 18 years. He's not going to let you get to him. And if it's a fluke when you do almost. And the style is so fast, but it's not fast in his drop back game. It's because of the run pass thing, the RPO thing that you RPOs. If you teach the fans what that is, that's a running play that the quarterback has the chance to throw the football as well. If he doesn't like the run look versus his pass opportunities with the real quick passing game. And so the ball comes out right now. And the few times that Ben pulled the ball to throw it and couldn't throw it, they had guys downfield and when we stopped them and it worked out fine for us. We didn't get the advantage of all of that, but we really handled it really well. And so that's that game. Let's go to the next one.
How about Jamal? How did he play yesterday?
He's all over the place. He was making hits all over the place. He had a chance to make a big pick that he just didn't play the ball. He was playing the receiver to make the hit and didn't see the ball coming, I don't think. He was zeroing in on the guy, and that was a really big opportunity. I mean, he would give anything to have that chance back because the ball was right to him, can't be more so. But, we missed that opportunity, which was really at a time when we could have iced the game, I think.
It seems like you used him more around the line of scrimmage, at least to my eyes. Was that part of the plan? Is that a
yes.
Steelers thing, or is that something that you got to do?
Just moving. No, just we got to do. We're just moving ahead. I thought he played really well, and he was very active. He fit the new things that we did. He did them exactly the way the plan called for it. We sent him a number of times when he didn't get home, but he did cause some problems and he had a good game.
Are there other guys on that defense playing well that maybe we're not noticing? I mean, are there people that are, maybe doing more than I would notice sitting at home?
Well, it's hard to probably appreciate like Puna Ford. He's really a solid football player. Al Woods does a really good job in his role of being the big dude in the middle. Those guys give us real consistent play up front, and it all starts right in the middle and works its way out, So, just to pick out a couple guys.
Did you talk to DK after his final play there with the fumble on the sideline?
I haven't talked to him about that play, but I was communicating with DK during the game. He cramped up a little bit in this one, this was kind of like the Minnesota game. A number of guys cramped up. So there's something going on here with the trip that we got to take care of guys better than we are. I think there's something for us to maybe enhance the hydration part of it. It's a big factor. You're in the planes, you're in the hotels, and it's all air conditioned and all that stuff, and that's what sucks the fluids out of you. And we have to maybe with some guys in particular do a better job. But, DK was, he was, I got a chance to get after him though. He was loose with the ball on the one that came out.
I just don't understand what's the goal there. I mean, isn't he right by the sideline and you're just trying to get out of bounds? Why is he fighting for extra yards?
Because he's a competitor, Mike. What do you want him? That's what he's going to do. I mean, he was going to get out of bounds. I think he'd have bounced his way out. I think at the time he was right there, but the ball got punched before he got to finish the play. The ball was a little vulnerable, and obviously they're really good at it, and they got him. But it was a fantastic. That whole sequence was amazing. There's a lot to talk about. I know it's really early in the morning for us, and people don't realize it's like 5 o'clock or something when we're doing this.
We're taping this a little early today.
Yeah, but there's a lot of stuff to talk about, and a fantastic play by Freddie Swain to put us back in the flow of that play and the sure. moments and the seconds that we gained right there to give us a chance to hook up a tie-up, tie-in field goal.
Let's go through just a couple of the other injuries just to see where people are at. Alex Collins, you said, got hurt?
Yeah, he got hit a couple times. He had a couple big hits that he took, but the reports we're getting that we'll see in a couple days from now. He got banged around in all that he put out there, but he's not out of the next week. We got to see how he handles it.
And the expectation is Rashad Penny could be back next week.
Rashad Penny is back. He'll be back full speed, ready to roll on Tuesday when we get back out of here.
How about Damian Lewis?
He's got a sore shoulder. Yeah, he hurt his shoulder a little bit, and we'll have to wait and see. I mean, he's really tough, and we'll he'll shrug it off if he can. But he's pretty sore tonight.
Did you, you know, it's not game related, but we have just a couple of minutes here, and this conversation could probably go a lot longer than that. But the John Gruden stuff that came out over the last week, and you know, just watching some of the reaction to it around the league. I don't know if you heard Coach Brandon Staley's comments in L.A. He really spoke quite eloquently about leadership and about what it means, and talking about the situation. You must have obviously seen what happened. What did you think about it, and where did your mind go as all of that went down last week?
That the world has changed, you know, and times have changed, and fortunately we're evolving into a new awareness that's really, really crucial that we get it. And the guys, the men and women that are in leadership positions, we have a real responsibility to act in accordance with the moving times, and if we don't, then we're not supporting really the evolution of our the culture that we live in, and we have to do a great job of that. It's to me, Mike, it's always been so important to me to treat people where and all people deserve to be treated well and equally, and doesn't matter what your persuasion, to make reference to people in disparaging ways and all that is so backwards for us right now. This is, and we just can't tolerate it. And we got to learn, got to grow, and in that there's a huge job for us to shift the culture and shift the awareness and how we understand differences and love the fact that people are different and all that. I mean, there's a lot to it. So.
Well, it was a heck of a comeback yesterday, Coach. We appreciate you taking some time early this morning. Yes, we taped before the show today, so this is about as early as it gets for either one of us. Yeah. Thanks for coming right in off the plane. We appreciate it. Good luck this week. Long week with the Monday night game. We'll talk to you next Tuesday.
All right, Mike. Thank you.
All right. Well, obviously, there's a lot in there from Coach Carroll to react to, but I choose to go here with probably the biggest news, which is that Rashad Penny is going to be active this week. He's going to play.
That's the biggest news.
I mean, there's a lot. Some people may choose to focus on the Cam Newton stuff. Others want to talk about DK Metcalf and why Pete bizarrely defended him and got a little upset with my question.
Yeah, but why talk about the past when you can talk about the future?
That's exactly right. You guys just want to think about the past. You want to talk about the run game stuff and, you know, create a whole soap opera with Russell Wilson. We'll focus on the real news that came out of that interview, which is that Rashad Penny's good to go.
That's the real news.
And by the way, when Pete spoke yesterday afternoon, he doubled down on that.
I talked to Rashad last week, but I think I told you guys that, you know, in looking forward to this week coming up, that he needed to have a great week last week, which he did, and he's had a number of weeks. The last 3 weeks have been really good for him. He is raring to go, and there won't be any restrictions on him unless the workload, you know, builds up on him, and I'm hoping that that's not going to be the factor because of the way he's prepared. It's extremely important that he comes back to us now and helps out, you know, in the running game and all that.
See? It's all good.
I heard a qualifier in there.
What do you mean?
Unless the workload builds up on him.
Well, that's just fair. Isn't that true of anybody? They're ready unless their workload is too much for them, in which case they won't be as ready.
What did you say yesterday? If he's in?
100 yards.
100 yards.
100-yard game. Coming. Hunnits. Hunnits.
Saints are one of the better run defenses.
You know, I'm not worried about that. He's one of the better running backs, Maura. You think Derrick Henry looks at who he's playing and says, I'm not going to get...
Are we comparing Rashad Penny to Derrick Henry right now?
Yeah, let's not do that.
I'm not comparing them.
You just did.
No, I'm just saying, I asked a question.
No, I don't think Derrick Henry does that.
Okay, and I don't think Rashad Penny does either. I'm not saying they're the same. I'm just saying I think Rashad's going to be ready to go, as long as the workload's not too tough for him. If the workload gets too tough.
He's an NFL running back
who's been on IR for the last 3 weeks. He's been hurt. He's just trying to get back up to speed, and they really need him. Jokes aside, that's Pete sending a message, right? Like, hey, Rashad, going to need you out here, buddy. No excuses this week. We need you. This is sort of do or die time. You are a first round pick. This organization invested a lot in you. We've given you opportunities. And by the way, when he's gotten those opportunities to take over, he's done pretty well. I mean, jokes aside, he has done pretty well. When he's been healthy and Carson's gone out and they've needed him to step up, he has generally run the ball well. He's got a couple of 100-yard games in those moments. Unfortunately, he's then gotten hurt after that and not been able to sustain it. But he has run well when given opportunities to do so.
No, he has, and it would be huge for them if he can stay healthy and do that.
I think he can. If you give him the same kind of running lanes that Alex Collins had on Sunday night, don't you think he could do at least as well as Alex Collins? I do. He's faster. He's bigger. Like, I honestly, if given the opportunity and given those running lanes, I trust Rashad Penny to pick up extra yards. The dude has an extra gear. He can legit, I mean, you know. He's like Derrick Henry. No, he's not. I'm sorry. I'm not gonna make that.
I forgot he is bigger than Alex Collins.
Dude, Rashad Penny's awesome. If you ever go back and watch his college highlights, he was a legitimate force. Legitimate force in college at what, San Diego State?
San Diego, yeah.
He was fantastic. You can see why they chose to pick him where they did. Kickoff returns, running just, I mean, all these long 80, 90 yard runs, breakaway speed. I if you can get him a little bit of blocking, get him a crease and then let him go, there is something in Rashad Penny. But whether or not he can stay healthy, whether or not they can block for him, whether or not all those things come together, whether or not the workload just kind of builds up on him this week, we'll find out. Those are all, I guess, legitimate questions that Pete Carroll will be asking. So, yeah, that's one. The other is the DK answer. I don't really understand why Pete is so defensive of DK Metcalf and his decision making there. He made the wrong decision. End of story. And if he just goes out of bounds and stops the clock, there's a decent chance they at least have a shot at the end zone before they kick the field goal. Maybe you win the game. Maybe you win the game on a jump ball to DK Metcalf. He cost himself an opportunity. So that one surprised me. And I'm looking at just some of the text messages here, 425. I understand DK fighting for extra yards on the fumble play, but you can't follow that up by saying they're really good at knocking out the football. If that's the case, why are you okay with DK fighting for the yards and not getting out of bounds? All
exactly.
In caps at the end. Yeah, I think Pete's a little careful with DK Metcalf. That's my guess, right? Praise publicly and correct privately. I'm going to assume that that's... There's no way... One of 32 head coaches in the NFL saw that play and was like, yeah, that's the right thing to do. You got to fight for extra yards there. There's no way. There's no possible chance that Pete believes that.
And just a positive spin he had to put on the answer. I don't get why he can't just say like, yeah, that was wrong. I talked to him about it.
Yeah, I'm guessing DK's a little finicky. I'm guessing, I mean, you saw the Twitter beef yesterday with Shannon Sharp. I'm guessing that, and Pete saying you got to kind of, DK is, he comes around to being clear-headed. I'm guessing you've got to praise publicly and maybe work on it privately. That's my guess, is that that's how Peter, because there's no way it makes sense to defend the play. All right, coming up next here, where do the Seahawks go from here? That's the big picture question. And the answer to that question is easily answered by thinking about an even bigger, more important one. Tell you what that is next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.